Next, practical advice on dealing with difficult children. What's happening when a child has a meltdown? And what's the best way for parents to respond? Education consultant and parenting expert Joseph Dreesen has been thinking on the topic. He's with us now. Hello, Joseph.
Hello, how are you?
Well, there's a lot of people in need of your help, I have to say. Emails and texts coming in through the morning, and in fact, as we speak. But just to set the scene here, when we talk about difficult children, gosh, that's just such a label, isn't it?
It is.
Children with behavioural issues would be a better way of saying it. Are we talking about full-on tantrum throwers or your average kid who can throw wobbly from time to time, especially if they're tired or racked up in some way?
Yeah, I think it's really helpful for the listeners to try and distinguish between that. But actually, the responses are actually in some ways the same. But like most children, between ages from 0 to 5, go through a developmental cycle. And most children, the younger they are, the lower their threshold for kind of coping with the difficulties of life. So as soon as they get overtired, or they haven't had enough to eat, or the stimulation is too much, or, you know, things have gone wrong, their lack of control is quite acute, and they have a big meltdown. And that is quite normal. And the average parent should realize this is just part of it. And you try and prevent them and try and moderate them when they happen. But what I'm really talking about is that some children are unusually difficult. Their tantrums might, you know, go on for an hour, or they might scream all night, or they are excessive, and it interferes with their life. It somehow just alienates people, and the parents are really stressed out. And then it's worthwhile thinking about the two issues. Is the child just born a little bit more difficult? And B, most importantly, are my parenting skills, which worked for my other child, no problem, are they working for this child, and should I widen my skills?
What's going on in a child's brain when we see an over-the-top reaction? We'll come back to the responses and predispositions in a moment, but what's
really
actually happening?
Normally our brain learns to regulate itself quite well, and we just live with our brains, and they operate fairly well. And so a normal child, when it gets frustrated, you know, they get a bit grumpy. But very young children, that whole modulation process is quite primitive. And so they get literally overwhelmed. They get completely overwhelmed. They're not being naughty. They're just overwhelmed with tiredness and angry and sadness, and that just washes over them. The neurotransmitters are just going berserk. And their little cortex does not have the control to modulate it themselves. That's why they need to be picked up and soothed. And that's why so often you can soothe them within 3 minutes and then they've forgotten about it. So the neural response of the brain is quite primitive. It's not modulated very well, and it can't be controlled by the child. The child doesn't experience being naughty initially. They just experience, this is how my brain is feeling at the moment and I'm expressing it.
We'll talk about parenting skills, but you mentioned genetic predispositions, essentially. How do you know if it's that? And I assume you've got to deal with it a different way, do you?
You do. The first thing is, that's what this talk is really about. It's really quite hard to tease apart of, I have a difficult child and I'm trying to do my best and it's not working, or I have a normal child and my parenting skills are a little bit inadequate, or I've got a very difficult child and my parenting skills are inadequate and the whole thing is going to custard. But the first thing, children who are difficult actually are difficult from very day one often. Especially if you can compare them to other children, they often, even in the womb, during this gestation period, they might be more active. They might kick the mum more. They're more cantankerous and colicky and cranky when they're small babies. As toddlers, they seem to be quite unreasonable in comparison to their brother and sister, and quite over the top. They're sort of a little bit different to other children you've been dealing with. If you're a parent who has never had a child and this is your first child, you might in fact mistake normal tantrums, normal wobblies, for abnormal behavior. It's not like that at all. We've got to remember that a child's sort of difficulties and anger and expressing himself inappropriately peaks between 2 and 3 years, and then gradually it subsides. So basically, I think, though, as a parent, if you think it's just not working, I'm just unhappy, maybe it's my fault or maybe it's my child's fault, but it's not working, it's worthwhile just investigating what can you do better, because there's a whole series of strategies which might work for you.
In fact, you've got, I think, five key skills, Joseph, that you want parents to have.
Yeah.
Five key skills up their sleeves. What are they?
The first key skill is to go right to the heart of the matter, that for some children, they just want more love and attention from their parents, and they want a stronger attachment bond. And the first thing you want to just think, eliminate, am I spending enough time with my child? And am I giving that one-to-one, I'm here for you, me and my mum, me and my dad? And part of that is, when the child goes through an inevitable up and down, am I actually there for the child to support them? They don't become resilient children until they're sort of, you know, five or six. And so when they're small, they need a lot of support. And as they get older, even though they have learned to become resilient, they still need the parent to say, I'm here for you, I'm your cavalry, and when you need me, I'm here for you to help you. And so that's sort of part of the attachment thing. And the last part of the attachment thing is that you just show in word and deed that they are special. That your child must feel that in my eyes of my father and my mum, I'm special. I know they've got three children, they're all special, but there is something special between me and my parents, and they support me, and I know that I'm special to them. That is number one. And so if you're overworked, if you're stressed out with mortgages, if you're busy and you're giving sort of fleeting attention to your child, some of the misbehavior might actually just be a call of attention. That's skill number one. Skill number two is to realize that you mustn't allow the child to press your buttons, to become emotionally a little bit calmer, because the research shows that if a child is difficult, a normal child who is behaving difficultly, or a child who is difficult and behaving difficulty, the parental response will, to a degree, determine the outcome. And a parental response, which is nearly invariably wrong, is an emotional one. You know, you shouldn't be like that, and you're very naughty, and I'm getting extremely angry, and I go into a huge rage because you've done this for the 15th time, and I'm late again, and so, because that anger, that emotional over-the-top response will not do any good whatsoever. And that's hard. Well, every parent finds that hard. But the key is to emotionally stay professional, to think, well, I am the 40-year-old parent, and this is the 3-year-old child, and to look at it more dispassionately and try and manage it rationally rather than with emotional angers. Part of that is you want to abandon all sort of parenting practices which are not good. Harsh language, harsh punishment, lots of talk, lectures, vague instructions, all that kind of not consistent and not very good parenting. You want to try and get rid of those mistakes. So that's number two, stay calm, stay professional. Number three is you want to actually analyze what sets the child up for this behavior. What is the behavior I'm really worried about? Let's pretend that in the morning they're always late and they cause us to be late and they never find their stuff, and then there's a huge meltdown by them and a huge meltdown by me. And you want to sit down and tease it all out. What sets the child up for this behavior? And it might simply be that you should get them up earlier and you should be more calmer. Or it could be they just can't cope with the complexity of getting their shoes and their school books, etc. They're just totally disorganized people. They're only small people. So the third skill is to actually assess what is setting the child up and what is triggering the thing. Like that they might be disorganized, that sets them up. And then when you get grumpy and angry that they're late again in the morning, that's the trigger for a massive row and a huge meltdown. And you want to think, how can I remove the setting up situation and what can I do not to trigger it? And that is, so it's a more cool, calm, methodical approach of analyzing what to do. The next skill is to see if you can prevent these episodes by changing all that. So you go and you think, well, you know, for example, at dinner time, there's always a huge row because he's playing on the computer and won't stop. And so how am I going to prevent that? And so you go through what are all the possible ways to prevent that. And so that's your I think we're up to the third skill. You still listening?
I am. I think that might be coming up to number four. I mean, you're asking parents to be a bit creative here yourself. You haven't got all the answers. If you've got that computer problem, put some thought into some creative ways of getting around it.
Correct. And try and prevent the happening, because many children, once they're into the habit of learning dysfunctional behaviour, of throwing massive wobblies or being extremely angry, once that's going, once the emotion is in full flight, it's like a horse which is bolted. It's very, very hard to stop, and then you've got to talk them down and calm them down and sort of get them down again. But preventing a horse from bolting, that's the key. And so preventing your child to go into these enormous rages or problematic area is for you actually to sit down, how can I eliminate that? And that leads to the next skill, which is really to realize that, why don't I just do it a little bit differently? Why don't I sit down with the child and try and find out, can we do this differently than we're doing at the moment? And so widen your skills. And there are quite a few skills you can do. Like, for example, the computer skill with the computer thing is what is called transitioning, warning the child that's happening. But it might be, for example, that you go into their bedroom and think, you know, let's work together how we can tidy this up. And you realize that, for example, he's completely disorganized, and you're always angry with him, and he gets furious with you because all his school uniforms, his rugby stuff, it's all wrong. And you say, well, shall we just abandon the drawers and just give you a series of pigeonhole, and the red one are for sport and the blue one are for school stuff, and make it much simpler for you? Would that help you? Or it might be that they just unable to cope with the whole evening routine, and that you think, well, why don't we abandon that evening routine and change it? Why don't we give him a nap after school? Oh, no, he's 14. He shouldn't have a nap, but maybe that's what he needs. Or another example I had with a family where the two little boys were just so angry with their mother because she sort of controlled the way they had breakfast, and I suggested to them, just have a buffet breakfast. So that what I'm proposing to the parents here is, have you thought of just going outside the normal range of interventions and do that? And then the last one, which I think is really important, is for parents to realize that often you need a bit more help, you know. And it is possible that you have, in fact, a child with some kind of temperamental or neurological or imbalance in their brain, and they're quite different and quite unusual. And you know, you could stick a whole lot of labels around here, ADHD, oppositional avoidant disorder, anxiety, depressions. They do exist. About 1% of the population has sort of episodes of mental illness. And what parents should actually think of is, if this is really affecting us, if it's not working, why don't we go and see somebody who knows more about it than I do? Why don't we go and see a pediatrician, go to our GP and say we're a bit worried? The pediatrician might just say, no, there's nothing wrong. Maybe you need to go to a parenting course like The Incredible Years. Why don't you do that? But the pediatrician might say, no, I was dealing with a family and they found that the child had definitely a sort of oppositional disorder which hadn't been diagnosed. So that's my last bit of advice. Well, a very important bit of advice for families is to actually don't muddle on all by yourself. Reach out to your extended family, go to your GP, ask your early childhood education centres, go to a parenting course, go to a paediatrician, clinical psychologist, and say, can you help me?
Well, we've had lots of parents seeking help today, so they're already on to number five. And I wanted to share at least a couple with you, Joseph, if I may, because I think they're examples of what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
I don't want to give any names here, but this mum says, look, I'm dealing with a five-year-old boy with emotional meltdowns. Tantrums are frequently in response to not getting his way and resulting in hitting and kicking and a lot of tears and screaming. We remove him to his room for some downtime, help him to get rid of his hyperventilating by counting nice slow breaths and stay close to him till he settles. But we're not sure if we're doing the right thing. We've got a three-year-old who often gets left out because the attention his big brother requires, and this can take up to an hour sometimes. We're becoming increasingly snappy at this behaviour, and it's really wearing us down. Where are we going wrong?
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I would say that the first sign of the frequency and the intensity of these meltdowns and his age and the fact that he sort of escalates the whole deal by a timeout, then goes into hyperventilation, and the parent feels that it's affecting them, it's affecting the family, is a classic sign that this child and his family need some kind of outside help to deal with it. Now, it might be very simple. The child might, in fact, be quite willful and dominant, and, in fact, the parents might have rewarded his bad behavior by giving him more attention. And it might, in fact, be that he needs a more balanced parenting process where the consequences are sort of, there are some consequences to his behavior. But I suggest that this family definitely needs to go and ask somebody, can you help us and what can we do? And you could ask for a clinical psychologist or a parenting expert or a parenting coach, or in fact go to a parenting course. But the advice for this child is that I would, if there are two parents in the family, then I would recommend they act as a team. They stay very calm, and they say, well, if there's a tantrum, we'll calm you down, but then you go to your room, and then we want you to calm down and stop escalating. And if you don't, then I think we need to have a talk about it. Maybe we'll take away some of your privileges. That is one way of going, but sometimes that takes quite a bit of skill. And also, you've got to just think, is this the best way or not? So that's my advice. Get some advice.
Here's another text for you. This mum says, I have an 8-year-old daughter who lashes out, scratches, pinches, hits and kicks her older sister with little or no provocation. She's also brilliant at making a mess and not so keen on tidying. She tries to negotiate, but consequences to her behaviour don't seem to work. She's loving to her baby brother. Please, some ideas. My husband and I are out of ideas. Many exclamation marks.
Yeah, that's interesting. It seems to me that the whole aggression behaviour is targeted at the sister. And not as a little brother. The consequences don't seem to work is in some ways a bad sign. What I recommend is that the mother and the father opens up a dialogue when the child is calm about the issue and how they could solve it as a family. That's my first thing. Have a dialogue with the child because she's old enough to talk. Then the second thing is I would just do a mental checklist. Would it help if the father and mother spend more time with the oldest daughter? Because if it's the oldest daughter who is really enraged with the middle daughter, it could be that she never got over the sense of replacement. And sometimes if the parent just spend more time with one-to-one with his child, building a trusting relationship, giving them a sense of I'm loved and I'm special to mom and dad, that often takes away the aggression, but also it enables a more trusting and adult dialogue. Once a child feels, yeah, you know, we had yet another beautiful lunch together, me and my dad, and then when he raises the issue about your behavior to your sister, you're just not so happy about, then there might be a more amenable approach. The final thing I also would add to the mix is to say that it's quite unacceptable and to just think, what consequences are you actually using for that? Like, once you put the effort in, putting more time, love, and care in the child, and you've put an effort into talking about it, then many children actually want the parent to intervene and help them self-regulate. And so you could say, well, make a list of all the things you really cherish and value, your sports and hobbies, etc. And shall we consider the possibility that if you agree, we'll write a little contract that this aggression with your sister will stop, and that it hasn't stopped, that you've got to sit down and say for the next week you've got to cross off 4 of your consequences. That as the child themselves starts to sort of negotiate with the parents that I cannot carry on like that and I must make some changes.
We've only got a couple of minutes for this one, but I did want to squeeze it in because I know this will be a big issue for so many parents out there. I've got a 20-month-old who sometimes has tantrums about going in her buggy and would rather walk or be carried. Normally, I let her not go in unless it's a safety issue, you know, busy road. I try to praise her when she's in the buggy, but sometimes I wonder if I'm spoiling her by carrying her a lot of the way. Any advice? She's generally a really good kid who loves to help, but this is an issue. And how many times have we all seen parents trying to deal with this situation? So a little bit of a concise one on this, Joseph, if you would.
Yeah. See, a two-year-old is still... she was 20 months, wasn't she? She's very young. And so her own internal self-control is poor. And there might be just a bad association with that buggy. How would we feel if we strapped a new wheelchair and wheeled around? What I'm saying is, so she's overreacting and associating unpleasantness with that buggy. And so in some ways, I think the parent is doing the right thing by just sidestepping the issue, not accentuating and developing a habit of sort of resistance, aggression, and opposition for this buggy thing. But what you could do, is, I know this sounds really weird, but, you know, like, say if you want to get a horse used to a float and they don't want to go into it, well, you just put food in the horse float and the horse eventually starts eating and eventually they enjoy the association of food and the object they fear. And maybe that's worthwhile, maybe just seeing if the buggy can become a sort of play, maybe racing around at home. You'd like to have try and give her a bit of lunch while she sits in the buggy. That is to try and break the association of anxiety, stress, and opposition to the particular object and to substitute it with something which is pleasant, etc. And then if you can't win, I would just ignore that for a while and carry on to see is when the child is older they can cope with it.
Joseph, thank you so much. And to everyone who's written, and I'm sure we'll come back to this topic. So much feedback today. Education consultant and parenting expert, Joseph Dreesen.